All righty, good evening. And, you know, I'm Dr. Lee Merritt. Once again, I was an orthopedic and spinal surgeon. Now I'm your professional medical rebel. And I know you all are very busy out there, so I'm feeling it's my job to go down the rabbit holes for you. And in the absence of a guest tonight, I'm going to go down two rabbit holes. The first one I just can't resist is the great balloon invasion of 2023. Understanding of the psychological implications of the great balloon invasion. I did a video on Rumble with Scott Kesterson of Bards FM that you can reference. That was a really interesting talk. Now I'm going to go into some other aspects of it. And then in the second half tonight, my goal is to get people off standard medicine. I'd like to have people be so healthy they don't need a doctor. So I'm going to go through just without talking about anything else and making it confusing, I just want to talk about what I do for myself and what I think we should do to get ourselves out of the mess that 2020 brought us, 2019, and we'll go from there. So if you like the show, please go to the site and use the code REBEL. We'll see you in a minute.
At the Brighteon store, we offer a variety of colloidal silver solutions that we make in Texas using Texas rainwater and specialized circuitry that I personally designed to produce silver ions in purified rainwater. We have a colloidal silver extra strength spray, a silver-based first aid gel, as well as a colloidal silver herbal mouthwash solution that people just rave about. Each one of these is subjected to our rigorous laboratory testing for metals, glyphosate, and microbiology in order to ensure product purity and safety for your health. We manufacture our own silver products right in the heart of Texas and deliver them to you using our own warehousing and fulfillment infrastructure that we built to serve real America. All of us here at Brighteon thank you for your support. Shop our silver products at brighteonstore.com.
All righty, thanks. So, who expected the great balloon invasion of 2023? Now, I'm not sanguine this doesn't bode ill, okay? I'm not going to tell you that this whole thing was a psyop. Like I said, I had a long discussion. I think it's a great Rumble video with Scott Kesterson of Bards FM on that particular point. But what else, you know, what else did they learn from this? The first thing I would say is that they learned that we didn't shoot it down as it entered our airspace. We didn't do anything until it had gone across the nation, across our nuclear sites and out. The second thing we learned, I suppose, is how we trailed it. I don't know all the military, what they did, but you know, we know they were circling around in Montana, and there's something wrong with that story because they claim the balloon was at 62,000 feet, but they were circling at 19,000 feet or whatever. So I don't know exactly what happened, but I'm sure the Chinese do. And I'm sure if it is a Chinese balloon, they learned something from that. And they also learned probably from all of us getting fascinated by, putting things up on the internet so they could tell the chatter. And I just want to make a little historical point that is a little local history. You know, in during World War II, the Japanese launched incendiary devices using balloons, and they launched them from the Pacific coast, I think from a, I don't know if it was a submarine, whatever they used, but they launched these balloons, and their point was to see what the where the balloons went in the jet stream, and to follow it, they were hoping that these incendiary devices would cause enough damage that would get it reported in the newspaper. Well, interestingly, the farthest inland balloon landed about 30 miles from where I live. It landed in Dundee, now it's part of Omaha, Nebraska. And there's a little brass plaque there commemorating the fact that the balloon landed, the balloon came down, it set a car on fire. But because in those days, Americans were thinking about supporting their country correctly, and they were not reporting, the news was not reporting things they shouldn't, they just didn't report it. So the Japanese didn't get the data that they wanted. And I think it's just an interesting story. But the point is that balloons have been thought of as, for some weapon purpose before. And so what could this be? If it's not just a PSYOP, I guess I'm going to say, and I'm saying this because I had a medical reason, I'll mention too, that's why I really got into this. But what could it be? So one of my friends, a very senior physician, said, somebody tell me what possible reason there could be for not shooting this balloon down over, empty space in America. And my first thought was, well, okay, let's think of what reasons there could be. And my first reason was weaponized fentanyl. In 2019, well, remember we had the big ship, and I can't remember what year it was, but they confiscated a ship full of fentanyl. I think it was just before COVID. So I want to say it was 2018 or 2019. And the ship was filled with enough fentanyl to kill the world a couple times over. At least that's what the news story said. I have no independent verification. So we know that there's a lot of fentanyl out there. We also know that it's very toxic in very small doses. You know, we use fentanyl in the hospital all the time. And when I was doing spine surgery, it was the best patient-controlled anesthesia, where you can, after surgery, you give yourself a little button to push, and you could then dose yourself with a pain medication. Now, the problem is when you use things like morphine or Demerol, it would make you nauseated. And especially if you've had surgical, upper cervical surgery or something, you don't want people vomiting into their brace, and you don't want, people retching. So fentanyl actually is really good for that. But you have to, in those days, and this is in 2000, 2005 timeframe, the machines to push to give you the button dose cost about $50,000, because they had to be very precise machines that could not accidentally overdose a patient, because we're talking very small doses. It turns out that the aerosolized effective dose of fentanyl is something like 0.03 to 0.04 micrograms per cubic meter. That ain't much, okay? So we also know, these are just all the little trivial facts that I've picked up over my lifetime. We also know that the Russians were working, and we know this because of Ken Alibek, or Conant John Alibekov is his name, who was the number two guy in Biopreparat, in the bio, one of the bioweapons directorates in the Soviet Union. And a lot of what he talks about, and others, was what was aerosolizing some toxin. They really worked on aerosols. Now, I kind of got the impression they gave up on that, but they had spent decades on it. And then it seemed like they were going to some kind of vector-borne disease, some parasite-borne disease or insect-borne disease. But in any case, we know that there have been bioweaponeers for years looking at aerosolization. Again, look at the anthrax that came out after 9/11. If you knew anything about that, it was not normal anthrax that that would be grown simply in a lab. It was very finely cut, and I can't remember exactly what they put with it, but it was made so it would poof out like powder. It would just go up as a pseudo. It wasn't really an aerosol. It wasn't sprayed from anything. But when it came out of the envelopes, it was highly dispersible. It just came out in a very, very fine mist and went everywhere, which made it harder to clean up and very expensive. That was probably the biggest disaster. It killed a couple people, but it really made a big mess that was hard to clean up. But what if you spent a lot of time weaponizing fentanyl? In 2019, They debated, and it was in a journal of weapons of mass destruction. I can't remember the exact name of the journal, WMD. I think it was WMD journal. But they had a discussion about that they were thinking about making fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. So let's suppose you wanted to do some land acquisition in America, and you're the Chinese and you have a population that you can't feed basically on your soil. And the problem with war, conventional warfare, is you not only destroy people, but you destroy infrastructure. But what if you wanted to do it without destroying the infrastructure? I can think of a few ways. And one of them is, you know, a drug that kills a lot of people, but doesn't blow up anything, doesn't damage anything, and can be broadly spread. The biggest problem in bioweapons of that nature is really spreading it to the people that you want it to get to. But let's suppose they could, and I don't think I'm giving anybody ideas. You know, these guys sit around and think about this all the time. Let's suppose, and I believe this has happened, that they can make weaponized fentanyl that's stable in a water base or on surfaces. Okay, it's a little bit more stable. So think fentanyl rain. So you blow it out of a balloon, and it's at a very high altitude, and it disperses, and it becomes a powder that gets into rain that becomes dispersed over a high area that when people touch it, get into it, it's toxic. Now, one of the problems about that is it doesn't get through the skin very well. You have to get into a mucous membrane. So there is that. So I'm not saying this is worked out, and I'm not saying this is what they were doing, but that may be one of the cautionary tales why they didn't just shoot this thing out of the sky. And if you saw Newt Gingrich put up a little, I think it was on Twitter. I saw it. I don't go on Twitter, but I saw it somewhere where he said, if you wonder what this could be, if you're thinking this is just a psyop, don't think that, because think about an electromagnetic pulse device. You know, you don't need, it's no longer needed to have a weapon of like a nuclear weapon to make an electromagnetic pulse that can wipe out parts of our grid. And in the book, he cites 1 second after, the author, and I should know the name of the author, but I don't. 1 second after, it's a very good book to read. It talks about what happens when the electrical grid goes out all of the United States for several years and the nightmare that it causes. Now, in that book, they hypothesized that someone would shoot rockets or something to put an electromagnetic pulse device from the Gulf of Mexico. And in the book, you never know who did it, right? It's completely deniable. And it went into three areas. It went into the East Coast, West Coast, and Midwest. So you had three devices in order to blanket the United States. That was the premise of the book. And at the end of the book, probably the scariest part is that you realize that this was during the Gingrich time in Congress, that they were actually looking at ways of mitigating an EMP. And most of you probably understand what they did and what this is about. But for those of you who don't, that really they can't harden everything. You know, they can harden military stuff and certain things can be hardened, but there's no general way to do it. So what they decided to do was stockpile the longest lead time, because, you know, if the electricity goes down, your factories go down. So how are you going to run to reproduce what you need? And their idea was, well, the switches of these, the switches for the grid are the longest lead time. They're the hardest to produce. We'll stockpile them. And that's not a bad idea. I'm not saying that, but I don't know what else they've done in the meantime. Hopefully a lot. That's been 20 years, I think. So those are just some potentials with the balloon. But the real issue is, and I'm in an agreement with Scott on this, that one of the things that it gets into our psyche is the concept that we may be going to experience an invasion. Now, I can't say we're not, but, you know, one of the things I can tell you is this whole event that we're going through, this whole from COVID to the food attack on our food supply, the attack on the long-term attack on our land ownership that's been going on, toxifying our food, toxifying our water, chemtrails, all the provable poisons that they put into our environment. Part of it is real, but part of it is generating fear. And if you look at COVID-19 as not a disease, but as a program, it was a three-step program. The first step was to create a false disease, to convince you there's this new novel disease out there that's never been seen before, and it's just unbelievably deadly and unbelievably transmissible. Well, that turned out not to be true. There was something, but the death counts of 2019, 2020 were not consistent with a pandemic. Okay. It was not significantly bumped that year. So a lot of it was PSYOP, was CGI, was whatever. It was a show. Okay. And at the end of the first phase of the show, we got people very convinced that it was happening and they became afraid. And when they're in, and they falsified testing, they made it sound so much worse than it was. They thought, they told you children were dying right and left. That wasn't true, but they made you afraid. And they made you afraid if you didn't run out and do their third step, which was to take the toxic vaccine or the vaccine or this, whatever we want to call this thing, that you would be endangering other people, specifically like your grandchildren. Okay. And they were told the grandchildren that they'd be endangering grandma. So it was a fear-based campaign. And, you know, David Icke talks about a lot about the Hegelian dialectic. It's three steps. It's problem, reaction, solution. You know, that's from Hegel. Anyway, the truth is they knew the solution before they wanted to, they knew what their solution that they wanted to give you. They wanted a universal vaccine. You go back in the time frame and they've talked about this forever. So they tried it with H1N1. They tried it with AIDS. I think there was another one that they tried to get people to, everybody line up for a vaccine because they told you how bad this disease was, but they all fizzled out, right? They couldn't get people afraid enough. But with this one, with COVID, they managed to do it. So it was fear that drove this. And when you're afraid, you make bad decisions, or you make decisions quickly that are not justified, or you don't need to make quickly. So what happened is people ran out and got this shot, knowing nothing about it. Doctors told people to get it, knowing nothing about it. Doctors told pregnant women it was safe when there was no studies done at that time on pregnant women. And the studies done subsequently on pregnant women, it's disgustingly bad for the chance of delivering the baby. So three-step program, problem, reaction, solution. I really think if we look at it correctly, fear is the driving force in this. And, you know, like they say in Dune, fear is the great mind bender. We cannot let this, you know, we have to laugh at things because the Uber, I used to call them Uber lords. Now, given what I know, I call them the Uber parasites, but whatever they are, whoever they are, they have no sense of humor. And one of the ways we get at them is to laugh at them. So you got to say, honestly, this is kind of the greatest thing about the great balloon invasion was all the memes. I mean, you just have to, from Eric Swalwell, you know, meme and the, you know, President Trump taking the thing down with a golf ball. It was just great meme making. The book Good Night Moon. It was Good Night Moon, Good Night Chinese, you know, false balloon, whatever. It was pretty good. So I think the point here is to not be in fear. Whatever happens, the way you get out of fear is we have to start taking care of our own health. We have to take back our own health. We have to take back our own lives at the family and the community and the county levels. We can't necessarily look at last night's exhibition. We can't save the Biden administration or the federal government. Let's face it. We hope somebody else is in charge of that, but we have to take back our own little world. And the first thing we have to do is just not be afraid. And one of the ways you're not afraid is to have a plan. Now, I would say what I saw with this balloon, the things I would venture to say is this is part of a multi-pronged attack. I don't know quite what the balloon means, but what I can tell you is even in my small area of the world, these fires destroying food plants have come to my home. We now have a chicken feed place that had a fire, just a spontaneous fire. You know, they never seem to find reasons for these fires, but they're all over. They're burning down our food supply. They're poisoning our food supply. And here's the other thing is Iowa, we are the number one, we're the egg chicken capital of the country. They're using the same technique to murder millions of chickens, of laying hens, that they used to convince you there was a strange new disease, a false PCR test. And I think the funniest thing in the PSYOP world about that is the fact that they show this blue spiky thing that looks so scary. Oh my gosh. And they SARS-CoV-2 virus, you know, they showed you this blue thing and it just, it kind of looks, as I told Scott yesterday, I said, you know, that my dryer balls are scarier. I could put your eye out with one of those, you know? So, The funny thing is, the same CGI image used for SARS-CoV-2 is now being used for avian bird flu. Are you kidding me? I mean, can they not even come up with better CGI, novel CGI? So you see what's happening here. This is, they're convincing you now there's animal illness and you need to get your animals vaccinated and you need to destroy your herds if they tell you to. Well, if we do this, we're dead. We have to stand up for our food supply and everybody's got to do it locally. So I think fear is the thing that's going to kill us. If we're not afraid, then we'll stand up locally, right? You'll do the right thing. We all get involved. I was interviewing Sheriff Mack down at the Restore Freedom rally put on by the Freedom Law School down in Florida. Great rally. I hope they do it again and I hope I get invited and you should all come. But what it was, we were talking about, he gave a speech about constitutional sheriffs. The point about a constitutional sheriff is the sheriff is their highest law in your county, and they're to interpose themselves between you and an out of control authority. Now, if they do that, we can stop this nonsense right now. We can stop mandates. We can stop the chicken murders. That's what we're really coming in. The next chapter in this book is not the great balloon invasion, but the great chicken mass murder of 2023. And then they're going to come after our beef cattle. Now, you know, remember, I don't have it completely in my head, but Kissinger's point that, you know, if you control the food, you control the people. In Russian history, that's how the Bolsheviks finally got control of the country. They couldn't do it because the last holdouts were the kulaks, the most productive farmers, and they wouldn't collectivize voluntarily. They weren't going to turn over their crops and their production and their farms and their lifestyle. And so they murdered them. You know, they starved them out. They targeted essentially the farmers in Soviet Russia. Keep that in mind because they're coming after our farmers. Now we can stand up again, get with your sheriff, get with your community and purchase things locally. That's really important. Give them a reason, give your farmers a reason not to sell out to some big money guy that comes along and wants to buy the farm, because that's happening too. And these are probably foreign buyers. I don't think that any of our guys are actually acting independently. So that's basically my point about what the balloon thing said to me is it's just one more prong in a potential. I mean, we know that we're at war. That's an atypical war and it's multifaceted, what they call fifth generation warfare. But fifth generation warfare, I don't know how Malone's using it, but it's not just about medicine. This is about our general attack on humanity. So the other thing I'll say about fear is why did people not just sit home? If they were afraid, why didn't they just sit home and let all this nonsense pass them by, right? Well, the answer is because they were also confused. Okay. I had Mark McDonald, I believe, on the show one time, and we were talking about this, about the psychiatric point about when you add confusion to fear, you get anxiety. And anxiety is one of those zones that the human body is physically damaged by so much, you can't stay in an anxiety zone. This is how we get Stockholm syndrome. This is how we start agreeing with cooperating with the captors just to get out of the anxiety zone. And that's what happened. Now, in my opinion, the way that we get out of that is to actually have a plan to do things. And that's what I'm going to do the second half is I'm just going to tell you this is my country living doctor's plan. Okay. I'm not saying it works for everybody, but it's a start. It's a baseline. And I'm just going to make it simple how you get, because we can't be dependent on these psychopaths anymore. And so it's really a five-step process, and it's not that hard, but you can't wait till you're sick. You can't wait until you have a problem. Okay. I have people call me and then they don't have the things at home they need to implement this plan. So I'm going to tell you what you need and I'm going to tell you how basically we're going to implement it. And hopefully I won't go to jail after that. So I say that because I'm going to use some of those six deadly words that you can't say on TV. And those are hydroxychloroquine, chloroquine, fenbendazole, nitazoxanide, ivermectin, and chlorine dioxide. It's no longer swear words. They don't care what swear words you say on TV, but they really, 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 really don't want you to use anti-parasite words. So that's what we'll talk about in a little bit. In the meantime, please support the show. Go to the Brighteon store. Use the code REBEL. Get a discount. Get the things you need for prepping and for your health. And we'll see you back here in just a little bit with a plan. We'll come up with a local medical plan. Thank you.
In today's modern world, knowing what you put in your body is crucial for maintaining optimal overall health. Many conventional health products claim to be good for you, but they may be contaminated with heavy metals, artificial chemicals, and toxins that could harm your health. Here at BrighteonStore.com, we believe your health and safety are our top priority. That's why we always go above and beyond to bring you the cleanest and highest quality nutritional supplements, superfoods, storable foods, preparedness items, and more. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today. In recent years, the world has only become increasingly more chaotic and uncertain. Disruptions to the supply chain have resulted in global food shortages, making it difficult for us to access the very resources we need to live in a functioning society. That's why it is now more important than ever to be prepared for the unexpected. Here at Brighteon and BrighteonStore.com, we've made it our mission to help you and your loved ones be prepared for any emergency. Which is why we are dedicated to bringing you a wide selection of ultra-clean and lab-verified superfoods, supplements, preparedness items, and other health products. So support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
Nearly all the vitamin C sold at retail today comes from China, and it's made from genetically modified corn. Even though vitamin C is a critical part of immune support, it's also critical to know where your vitamin C comes from. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon and BrighteonStore.com, and we only sell non-China, non-GMO vitamin C. We then subject it to rigorous laboratory testing in our own food science lab, checking for heavy metals, glyphosate, as well as microbiological contamination. Only after it passes our tests do we encapsulate it and package it for our audience. You can find it at BrighteonStore.com. It's not the cheapest vitamin C on the market, but it is by far the most rigorously tested and honestly sourced vitamin C available anywhere in the world. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com.
Hey, I'm Dr. Tony, and we love Uncensored Truth on Brighteon TV.
Hello, I'm Dr. Steve Hotze. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Are you fed up with your doctor giving you drugs simply to mask your symptoms rather than treating the cause? As you age, I believe you should be brimming with energy, vitality, and enthusiasm for life. The Hotze Health and Wellness Center treats individuals from all over the country and world in an environment of extraordinary hospitality. We specialize in the treatment of allergies, yeast, replenishing natural hormones, vitamin and mineral supplementation, and a healthy eating lifestyle, all of which boost your immune system, increase your energy level, and your health span. If you'd like to obtain and maintain health and wellness naturally without pharmaceutical drugs, then contact one of our wellness consultants today at 281-698-8698 or visit HOTCHWC.com and request a free copy of my best-selling book, Hormones, Health, and Happiness.
All righty, so I'm back, and thanks for watching. We're going to talk now about what to do concretely medically. You know, in all this mess that we've been through, I remember the words of Max Kaiser. Max Kaiser does he does an economic podcast, The Kaiser Report. And one time I heard him, he was talking about problems of crapification and complexification. And it's really true that they've purposely overcomplexified things so that you don't know what to do. So I'm trying to make things simple here, and I'm trying to come up with an easily explainable, you know, 4 or 5 part step process to avoid standard medicine downfall. And, you know, and I say this as a classically trained physician, but I have successfully, I think, escaped the COVID death cult. So here's what I'm going back to, and that is ancient medicine. You know, ancient medicine, there were only 2 treatments. There was purification and detoxification. Now, the purification meaning get right with gods. That's why many physician offices essentially were in temples. When you went to the physician, you went to the temple in ancient Rome. The second thing is detoxification, and that means you get rid of all the poisons in your body. And they recognize that we accumulate toxins just in life. Okay. Now we have an added, you know, we're in a highly technologic society, and even without them purposely poisoning us, we get in contact with lots of toxins. But if you look around your world and you see what every time, I mean, if I go into other people's houses, I notice it, I've kind of debulked mine. Things like perfumey cleaning solutions, I think, are the worst. This idea that we have to clean the germs off every surface is just not right. Soap that has lots of perfumes, underarm deodorant, and mostly antiperspirant, because antiperspirant has aluminum. Fluoride in your toothpaste, fluoride in your water, glyphosate in your foods. Every time you turn around, there's something. So we need to understand that toxins are a major thing. And what is the in Latin, the term virus means not little animalcule that makes you sick, but Latin for virus means toxin. So they understood that. So I'm going to list the things that one needs to do. And we're in a spiritual war. So being in touch on a daily basis with God is key. Number 2. So here are the 4 things besides that. You detoxify yourself and you don't poison yourself. So you don't keep pouring in the poisons on one end and then think you're going to eliminate them on the other end. You've got to eliminate the ones you need to, but you've got to stop poisoning yourself. We're going to talk about that. Number 2 is parasites. Now, I have a whole video on my website. Next week, I'm going to be interviewing an Egyptian parasitologist. Parasites are the big lie that they've ignored, and our medical training has completely bamboozled us. Okay. They told us in medical school, and I was in medical school 76 to 80 in New York, and they said, oh no, parasites. They taught us about parasites, but they said, parasites are basically a third world country problem. Don't worry about them. Essentially, that's what they said. That is not true. We all have parasites. I'll just tell you one factoid. When I was in medical school back then, they told us that a risk factor for multiple sclerosis, otherwise known as MS, was having a lap dog before the age of 5. Now, what should that have to do with a neurologic condition, right? Oh, we could come up with all sorts of things that you got some weird antibody stuff, but no, think about it, parasites. You got a dog sitting on, dogs go and get wormed, right? But unless you worm the child, they always say that if somebody has pinworm, for example, that's one parasite they agree that we get, that kids get little pinworms. You got to treat everybody in the family or it'll just come back. Well, if your dog gets wormed, but you don't get wormed, you're just passing it back and forth. And I say wormed, but it's really parasites. There's lots of different kinds of parasites. The CDC now actually admits on their website, but they never told us about it. They didn't teach us about it, that probably 50% of Americans are infected with toxoplasmosis. And toxoplasmosis, which we get from cats and other things, gets into the brain and is associated with schizophrenia and other mental illnesses. What? They didn't tell us that either. But even worse, recently, Dr. McDonald down in Florida, I believe he's in Florida, he put out information that he did 10 autopsies on MS deaths, people that had multiple sclerosis that died, and 10 out of 10 had parasites in the brain and spinal cord. You know, one of the problems in medicine is when we convince you we know what something is. We know about disease because we've named it. Oh, multiple sclerosis. We know, you know, multiple sclerosis is a condition in which you have these symptoms, blah, 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 blah. And on MRI, we see plaques, what we call plaques, in your brain and your spinal cord. Now, if you really pressured a neurologist to say, well, what causes the plaques? They said, well, it could be this. We see oligoclonal bands of, you know, different immunoglobulins. We have all these different terms for it. At the end of the day, they've never really figured out what caused it. And apparently had not done autopsies systematically on MS patients. What? You know, that's just mind-blowing to me. But he did, and he showed that in some of these, you could actually see the little nematode wormholes in the brain where we saw the plaques. Now, a lot of these parasites are not visible to the naked eye. I mean, I asked a general surgeon, do you ever see these when you open them up a bowel? And he's never seen one, but he's young and hasn't seen that, you know, hasn't been there for 40 years. Maybe he'll see it. But the point is, you don't have to see it to have parasites because most parasites are intracellular. So, and the other big thing about parasites, which I go over in detail on my website, on the parasite paradigm, is its relationship to cancer. There's a whole, this isn't my idea. This was a German group that's been trying to get this word out for years. And they just weren't able, they didn't get it all out, but you'll see it. I think it's right there, somewhere down in there. It's the parasite paradigm. And they show a video and they show how the parasites get, there it is, parasite paradigm on the left there. They show how the parasites are intracellular, and when they burst out of the cell, they're in the bloodstream, and they show the whole thing. It's pretty, and they show that all cancer patients have this. This is being reported now all around the world by doctors. So that's a big thing. And then the last thing is EMF protection, because we've never proven, quite frankly, and you can listen to, you know, Thomas Cowan, Andy Kaufman, these guys, these doctors are smarter about this than I am about the lack of proof of viruses. But I will tell you that I agree with it. I've looked at the whole thing and I agree that there are not viruses the way we think about it. And I'm going to tell you then how we get sick if there are no viruses here in a minute. But what we have proven is electromagnetic frequency toxicity. And I think I was on Alex Jones. I talked about this. I think I talked about it on this show about the Kosnacheff effect, which showed that you can actually transmit symptomatically specific diseases electromagnetically. And that is a big deal. Okay. Think the 5G towers. So, so again, the four things are detoxify, parasite cleanse, EMF protection, and the last thing is supplement your deficiencies. Okay, we have 90 essential nutrients that we need, that we have to swallow, that your body doesn't make. You see, some animals actually make vitamin C, but we don't. So you have to take certain things down your gut. And again, for many years, I kind of woke up at the age of 50 that I needed to have supplements. I shouldn't just, you know, just taking vitamins and things. But when I started taking vitamins, as a naturopath pointed out to me, I started doing it just like I was treating a disease, like a cardiac disease, with a pill here and a pill there. And you can't do it that way. If anybody understands, you know, if anybody has a non-compliant husband, you'll know what I'm talking about. You know, they don't take pills well. Husbands don't take pills well. So basically what I discovered is if I made a drink, I could get this to work. So I'm telling you, I've completely revamped my idea about this. And that is what I use, is some kind of balanced, either liquid or powdered nutritional supplement. You can take some pills because you might want to add some, you know, if you're having pre-diabetic symptoms, you might want to add some chromium, for example. But generally, what you need to do first is make sure you're covering all your bases, because if you take 60 and you miss 30, it's a series of chains of metabolic event. You're not necessarily helping yourself that much. So how do we do it? Well, there's a lot of ways to detoxify. The first thing I said is don't add toxins. I mean, I make my own soap, and I got into it just as a fun thing to try one time. But I loved the soap so much, and it was so pure, and it felt so good on my skin that I just kept it up. But, you know, I'd be traveling and I'd go places and I'd get hospital, or not hospital, well, sometimes hospital, but also hotel soap. And I didn't really notice it. But now that I haven't been traveling a lot, recently, when I went down to speak at Florida, I found myself really not liking to be around the hotel soap because it had perfumes in it and mine doesn't. So once you, it's like so many other things. Once you get rid of the toxins in your body, once you stop drinking that Diet Coke or whatever it is that your bad habit is, you will notice that if you accidentally go back to it or you relapse and go back to it, it tastes like chemicals. We can adapt to things and we forget how bad these things are. So look around your life and don't toxify yourself. I was just on a podcast, and I'm going to have him on this show, by the way, at some point, a nutritionist about glyphosate. Now, you know, I have a farm and we farm soybeans and corn, and they've set farmers up to the point that if you don't farm with glyphosate, which is Roundup, you won't be productive. It's the cheapest weed, a weed abatement you can do. But there's some foods that just absolutely suck it up because of the way they use the glyphosate. And one of them is wheat. I'm just going to tell you, the grains are notoriously bad. So the first thing to do to get that out of your system is to not eat wheat. Don't go gluten-free. So stop talking. So that's on the toxification problem. And I can't tell you to do this because I don't want to go to jail. So I would not ever tell anybody to do this. But there's a chemical called chlorine dioxide that is used to sanitize the food you get out of the grocery store. It's used to sanitize water systems. It's very good oxidant, but very low corrosive agent. Doesn't corrode. It's got the perfect redox potential, which, you know, in chemical terms, it can kill the bad bugs, but it doesn't kill you. It's just perfect. And there's nothing really else like that. Now, it isn't part of standard medicine, but I've heard enough about it, and I watched the video on chlorine dioxide, the universal antitoxin or antidote. It's the universal antidote is the video, I think. An ICU nurse put this together, very well researched. He did a great job. It's very long if you watch the whole thing, but even if you don't get through the whole thing, if you get through part of it, you'll understand what we're talking about here. And I found that by using that, I don't worry about, people are always asking me, do you prophylax yourself with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine when you go out on the, on a trip and get on an airplane? No, you know, because it's not, once you get out of the idea that we're being attacked by viruses, you really start looking at the world more reasonably. Like just the other day, and I didn't read the follow-up, so I don't know what happened with this, but they had a school, I think somewhere, where 170 kids just suddenly developed projectile vomiting. Now, the words in the headline suggested they had contracted something, which means like they got some disease. But I'm going to tell you, 20 years ago, if you'd had a whole bunch of school children with projectile, meaning just, you know, vomit at a distance kind of thing, you'd say, what poisoned them? Because that's classic. Okay. But we've gotten our minds melded around this whole viral thing, and we're not looking at the toxins in our environment. So when you go on a trip, think about it, you get on the airplane and you suddenly are in an environment where they've just put all this nasty antiseptic, sprays on all the seats and everything in that airplane to get it ready for passengers, right? They think they're sterilizing it overnight. What they're doing is leaving a toxic residue. And you get on the plane, you touch all this stuff, you get it into you, you breathe it in, and they're recycling the air as you go through the air. You're getting some fresh, but they're recycling it. And that is what's making you sick. And you probably were up too late the night before, getting ready to pack, getting all excited. Then you go on a vacation or a trip and you drink more alcohol than you used to. And then you wonder why you get sick. You've dosed yourself with toxins. You've decreased your sleep and your immune capacity. And now you wonder why you're sick. But you're going to blame it on somebody on that plane must have been having the flu. No, that's not what it is. And we know that because of the historical influenza. And I'm just going to very quickly rehash that because I've said it before on this show, but people need to really believe it. They need to understand that that's the lie that they're telling you. You know, when you have a mystical object like a virus, you can wave it around and then convince people that everything's a virus. So it's gone from, you know, it'll be flu this year, then it'll be Marburg, then it'll be monkeypox, then it'll be, you know, doesn't matter. It's going to move around. And now we're going to have different types of diseases we've never heard from probably. So what happens in the winter when we have people die that they say die from the flu? And by the way, when they were actually counting deaths of flu, the estimate 20, 30 years ago that I would see that was actually published by when the CDC was somewhat useful, it was 6,000 to 7,000 people a year, not 20 and 30 and 40 and 70,000. That's when they started calling it influenza-like illness. If you're paying attention, they're changing the words to convince you of things that don't exist. So influenza, it used to, in the 1600s, we didn't have a yearly flu season, in the 1700s, in the 1800s, and most of the 1800s, we didn't have a yearly flu season, right? What happened is flu would break out every decade or two decades or three decades. It was on kind of a long cycle, okay, but it was not regular. And when it happened, it would break out uniformly kind of all over the world. Like it would be a pandemic, but it didn't go from the Americas to Europe or to Asia to Europe. It didn't move around like that. Thankfully, the British Admiralty kept good records, and they had these books of the ships at sea, and the books of the ships at sea would show that they'd get sick at the same time the people on the land did, but they hadn't been on shore. So how can this be transmissible disease? It can't be. And what it turned out to be was sunspots. As the sunspots get active, as the sun gets active about every 11 years sunspot cycle, it gets active. And when it gets really active, and if it's a big cycle, it ionizes our atmosphere, charges our atmosphere, and we get sick. Now, why would that happen? Well, it turns out that every cell in your body is a little battery. This comes to the work of Dr. Pollack, who's done beautiful pioneering work on the fourth stage of water, the fourth, it's meaning water is not just, you know, liquid, ice, gas, it's also gel. And water gel is what's in your cells, okay? You don't leak when you cut yourself. You're in a gel system. And that gel is charged. It's bipolar. There's a positive and negative charge. And when you get a toxin in those cells, the way your body gets the toxin out of the gel is through an electromagnetic extrusion, okay? You put a charge around the offending toxin and you push it out with like charges. So what do you need to do that? You have to charge your battery. So grandma used to say, you didn't get enough rest to charge your batteries. Go to bed early tonight. Well, she was actually quite right. But that's not the only thing that charges your batteries. The reason that people get sick in the winter and the reason that we get especially sick when we have these flu outbreaks or solar flares causing the ionosphere to get charged is it just changes our electromagnetic milieu. You know, this is what happened in 1918. It wasn't the little city, the scrawny looking city kids that came down to Fort Riley, Kansas that got sick. It was the young strapping farm boys from, you know, Tennessee and Nebraska and Idaho and places that didn't have any electricity. And suddenly they're sent down to Kansas and they're sitting under a telegram line because the school down there was telegram operators. So when you're suddenly your electromagnetic situation changes, think sudden increase in cell phone use, sudden 5G, sudden any change, people start getting sick. But in the winter, the problem is you also charge your battery by being out in the sun. We were told you're not a plant in medical school. You don't get energy from the sun. Yes, we do. That was not true. And it's the infrared and near infrared that's helpful. So today, my husband and I got into the infrared sauna today because we hadn't been outside. And it's a good thing if you have that opportunity to do. You could use a tanning booth if you're over 18. You know, getting out in the sun, no matter how you do it, is good. Getting some of this infrared. Because what it does is help create that charge separation, that charge in your cells it uses to expel toxins. Now, the other thing, by the way, and so the people, by the way, that don't do that, that are so in the winter, we're inside, we're not getting enough sun, we're pretending it's still summer, we have artificial lights, we stay up too late. In the summer, we can work longer hours and we can work harder because we're out in the sun. The normal person, you're out in the sun, you're getting some sun, you're charging your batteries, you can farm, you can do all these things. But in the winter, we should go to bed earlier. We should live by the sun cycle. And we should realize we don't have the energy to expend in the winter we had in the summer. Your batteries do discharge. And the people that go down and get sick and die are the people that are the most toxic. So this isn't the time to take in a lot of toxins in the winter. But what do? You know, we, again, alcohol is a big toxin that we take in the winter around holidays. just be advised. It's not the best thing for you. I'm not trying to sound like a temperance person, but I'm just saying there's time, place, and attitude, as my old band teacher said. And you need to make sure that if you're going to take in toxins, you can handle the toxins, and winter's a bad time. So live by the sun cycle, get some sun, detoxify yourself, don't take in toxins, and your chance of going down and boost your immune system by good nutrition, supplement nutrition, all the things we talk about and we talk about on our podcasts and our websites and we talk on this show, do those things and your chance of going down in the winter goes way down. Okay, that is how we get disease in the winter. It's a mismatch of energy. We're not getting the energy in from the sun and we're expending too much energy. Now, there's a couple other things to do to help you fight toxins so you don't get sick in the winter. When you start sneezing, when you start feeling like you're getting something, you're toxified. Start thinking of it that way. How do we get rid of the toxins? Well, a fever is an adaptive response because think about Jell-O. How do you soften Jell-O? You warm it up. And to get the toxins out of your Jell-O-like cells, you need to warm it up. They've done big studies before computers in India about using chemicals like diclofenac or Tylenol or whatever to lower temperatures. They always found that the diseases were made worse. You had TB was more fatal and lasted longer, and polio more paralysis and lasted longer. So don't take temperature-lowering drugs. A temperature is adaptive, not maladaptive. Get good rest. Supplement, stay away from organized medicine. That's probably a big thing. And whatever you do, don't keep injecting poisons into you. As I spoke after Judy Mikovits at this meeting in Florida, and her point was, this isn't a disease. This is infection by injection. I love the topic. I love her term, injection, infection by injection. These things, these pandemics, these deaths like the 1918, it followed a big vaccination campaign. The people that died were vaccinated. And I'm sorry, I'm not suicidal. I'm not giving out my address, but that's what I'm going to tell you. So stay well. And hopefully this helps. And we'll see you next week. Thank you very much.